Good morning. Why don't you grab a chair first? Explain a few things. This is the case of Dicus versus Dicus. Mr. Sullivan, good morning to you. Apparently there is no brief filed by the appellee. We appreciate you wearing your masks when you are not presenting. When you are presenting, please take your mask off so that we can hear and understand you. Justice Miller-Lerman is participating by WebEx, so you will be able to see her as you can on the screen.
Good morning.
And otherwise, do you have any questions before we proceed? Thank you very much. You may then approach and proceed.
May it please the court. As with most family law cases, this case is very personal to the parties, but it is also one of millions of pixels which comprise the fabric of our nation. When we look at this single case, it is two people who had significant struggles in their marriage. Mr. Dicus does not want a divorce for numerous reasons, and Mrs. Dicus does want a divorce for numerous reasons. And this is where I believe we have an unequal protection of the laws. One party will receive a divorce by testifying that in spite of efforts to save it, it is irretrievably broken. Neither part, the other party cannot stop that. It's kind of like trying to hold back an avalanche. Mr. Dicus,
did you assert equal protection as a grounds for challenging the statute, or was it due process?
It's due process and also equal protection. It's both of them. And I think they're intricately tied in a case like this. And so, and I'll get to that. I think it's also included in my brief a little bit. So it is. It's both of them, Your Honor.
Doesn't the district court have to make a finding that marriage is irretrievably broken? I mean, that
yes.
Is a finding would they have to reach.
Yes, they have to reach that finding. But in order to reach that finding, there has to be simply a statement in the testimony that the marriage is irretrievably broken. We tried, didn't work. There's nothing that can repair it. And that only has to come from one side.
But if the other side disputes that, then there's a factual dispute for the court to decide.
There should be. In practice, you typically don't see that in district court. And so
was there anything that prevented you in this case from offering evidence that the marriage was not irretrievably broken?
Yeah, I can't point to anything specific in the record in this case, which we tried to present evidence and were prevented from doing so. From the get-go in this case, Your Honor, my client, for personal reasons and because of his faith, didn't think that he could cooperate with the process because he doesn't believe in divorce. And so
I beg your pardon. May I interrupt? And I'm sorry I didn't do this sooner. Is this correct that custody and children are not involved in the matter? Is that correct?
Yep, there's no minor children in this case. However, there are adult children, and therefore, one of my points in this, and I believe it's even in my brief, is pointing out that in every divorce case, it's not limited just the parties in the caption. There's other people that are involved, and kind of in the beginning of my oral argument, I point out that this is just one pixel in many of the fabric of our nation. So what we have is kind of a ripple effect from every divorce, unintended consequences, you might say. These people are certainly focused on their own interests and their own needs, but it affects society as a whole. And I think that an argument can be strongly made that this is why we're seeing a lot of chaos in our society today, because of the breakdown in the institution of marriage, which I think, and many have argued,
is that an issue for the legislature rather than this book?
To an extent, I think there's something that the Supreme Court can do about this as well. I think that the legislature certainly has to make it. And this sounds, you know, kind of against reason, but the legislature makes needs to make it a little more difficult to get into marriage, so people go through some certain steps before they get into it. Because right now, the best example of how to live a married life comes in the home. So a young child looks at how their parents are treating each other, how they're dealing with difficulties, how they overcome those things, and that teaches children how to treat their spouse and how to treat their children. But in today's society, we have about 45 million children that are being raised without two parents in the home. And so they don't get to see that. So we've taken away the best education for our future married couples because they don't have that experience in their lives. The second best place, and the legislature has to take care of that. The second place is maybe in education prior to, during that engagement period. So that might be in high school classes, which we all know is going to have pretty limited effect, but maybe engagement courses. So in order to get your marriage license or to follow through with your marriage license, you have to show that you've gone through some sort of an engagement course, which some countries do. Poland is an example of that.
Does the state have to be in the marriage business?
I don't think it does, but it is. And so, and we've seen that in the Supreme Court cases such as Windsor and Obergefell and the relationship cases like Lawrence v. Texas. And
does the state have to permit divorce at all?
No, I don't think the state has to permit divorce. But as I argue in my brief, in some cases, it is in the best interest of actually both parties and society that we do allow people to separate and maybe not necessarily divorce, but at least legally separate. And so there is two sides to that story, cases of abuse and other problems.
This is a statute that's been on the books for longer than I've been a lawyer.
Yeah.
Isn't it curious that it's being brought up at this point in time?
I don't know that it's curious. I know that it is being brought up, and it has been brought up before, but not certainly not successfully, and I don't think thoroughly. And I think that given the current state of society today, it's the perfect time to talk about this case.
So is your challenge substantive due process?
I think it's both a due process and an equal protection.
What process from a procedural standpoint was your client deprived of?
So as recognized in cases like Obergefell, there's certain things that you simply get as a benefit through marriage. I think that case references over 1,000 federal benefits are tied to marriage.
Due process.
That's true. That is substantive due process as opposed to procedure.
To return to my previous question, was there any procedural due process?
I think the bare minimum of procedural due process is inherent in the statutes. I think when you say that there has to be a finding by the court that there is a marriage that is irretrievably broken, then I think that may meet the bare minimum of the standard, but only if the court then, I guess, procedurally follows through with that and in reality says, well, let's investigate whether there is evidence that would say whether or not the marriage is irretrievably broken. What
so
has happened?
If the parties don't bring it up, if one says marriage is irretrievably broken and there's no contest, the court has some duty sua sponte to do something itself?
Yeah.
From where do you draw that? From whence does that obligation spring?
Yeah, I think at that point there has to be a balancing test.
Wouldn't it actually be unethical for a judge to do his or her own investigation into a matter that into a disputed, litigated matter that was brought before the court?
Yeah, I think if it's not laid out in front of them, there's nothing they can do with that. And so if the parties stipulate that there has been the marriage is irretrievably broken, they put forth some effort to reconcile and can't do it, then I think it takes care of that question in total.
And in this situation, only one side appeared at the final hearing, that individual testified the marriage was irretrievably broken.
That's
so
correct.
That's all the evidence the court had to consider that issue.
That's correct.
So what's the court to do in that situation?
The court in that situation, I think, still has to look at it and for themselves to actually make a thorough finding as to what has happened and, could the marriage benefit from further therapy or counseling or efforts to reconcile.
So the court should question that party that's present to ask what processes will put in place, what efforts were made. What else could be done that the court should do that additional inquiry?
I don't think that's incumbent upon the court under those circumstances. I think if one of the parties has alleged in some pleading that the marriage is not irretrievably broken, that might be enough. Can that be overcome by testimony that says, no, it is irretrievably broken, and that's it? I think there you have two parties. Like I say, one wants the divorce, one doesn't. They're both on equal terms in that situation. So I think what the court needs to do is say, in spite of what the parties might say, we have to, at this point, say, you have to go through, we require mediation. You have to go through therapy. You have to go through at least one counseling session together, maybe some sort of a reparation effort that used to be part of the law needs to come back in so that there can be something substantive that shows, okay, these parties honestly gave it a good effort. So if the
let me see if I can circumscribe your argument or make sure I'm following it. Are your remarks directed only to irretrievably broken as a basis, or for example, if there were testimony only perhaps by one party about interfamily violence, then what would the court do if that was the basis for the one party that was appearing? Thank you.
I would say the counseling would be for both, because even if there has been violence toward one of the parties in the marriage, counseling can still help, because that counselor might be able to, you know, then refer to the victim onto assistance. And we know that with victims, sometimes their openness to getting assistance and dealing with that can be something difficult to overcome, the resistance to that. So what I would say is the court's real role in this is to say no-fault divorce is not working. It hasn't worked as we briefed. But the important thing is that there's things that the court can do that the legislature can also do, but it hasn't done in 50 years. And that is to say there has to be some efforts of reparation, and you need to go back and review these statutes to look at the current situation in society and fix it.
In Nebraska, we have a constitutional provision that imposes separation of powers between the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary. Isn't your proposed solution a little bit transgressive of that provision?
Well, if it sticks specifically to how our courts handle this specific type of case, and the court can have its own rules, then this can be a rule of the court that says, just like mediation is required, we're also going to require at least one counseling session so that there is, regardless of what the parties say, there's an outside source that says, hey, there's some really serious problems here. Or we think there's things that they can do to give this thing a shot, because one person's heart has not been in it up to this point.
Now, in your brief, you also challenged the attorney fees in this matter. Can you point to any of the specific fees that were listed by the appellee's attorney that you believe were unreasonable?
We really provided no resistance procedurally through things like discovery, asking for continuances, serving the plaintiff with our own sets of discovery to expand the breadth and width of this case. Basically, what we said is, our goal here is to not get divorced. We know that it's holding back an avalanche. And so we want to spend as little of everybody's money and as little of the court's time in at least getting this issue before the district court. So when we come to that trial at the end, we can say, Judge, we think there's constitutional issues. And we did file a couple of motions that tried to get that issue in front of the district judge prior to the trial, which, of course, we lost. But we really tried to do the bare minimum in this case so that the plaintiff didn't have to spend a lot of attorney's fees, and my client didn't have to spend a lot of attorney's fees, and the state didn't have to invest a lot of time in dealing with parties that were haggling over.
There were some discovery issues.
There were some discovery issues, but they were requests for admissions. Well, I'm not sure if that, but interrogatories and stuff.
Resulted in a motion to compel, which was granted.
That's correct, because my client, again, was saying, I don't think this is constitutional. And so that was the basis, and that's when we filed the motion to dismiss, and then later the motion for summary judgment, basically saying we're compelled to involve ourselves in this case that we think is unjust. But it wasn't because we were being tricky with our questions or being dilatory. It was simply saying we don't believe this is appropriate.
Your notice of a constitutional challenge did not list a specific statute. Is that a procedural problem?
I don't think it is, because, the whole divorce statute, because of this, could get sent back for further review by the legislature. So I think it's all the cases regarding family law as far as dissolution is concerned, whether it's custody, alimony, whatever, all those are encompassed in this. So It's just a general request to not only have the court take action within family law cases, but also to have the legislature go back and say, well, our no-fault divorce statutes have been found to be unconstitutional. Let's go back and make sure that they comply with the Constitution.
Are there such findings by this branch, by the court in other jurisdictions?
I've found none. There were some cases that I reviewed early on in this case, and you know, I probably didn't see them all. I'm sure I didn't. But basically, what is happening in these cases, people are trying to bring them up and look to me like they were constantly, overlooking a necessary procedure, a statute. They didn't have a key bit of evidence in the case. And so they weren't decided primarily on all of the merits of the case. So unfortunately, I don't think it's had a thorough review in any state up to this point. And hopefully we've done what we need to do to get the review thorough before this state.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Right.
Thank you.
This then concludes arguments in this particular case. Please leave by the side door. Use your masks if at all possible. We have a short break in the next case when the cleaning crew comes in. Thank you very much.
Thank you.